Hi, welcome to A Responsible Day for the 17th day of Kislev. Thank you for joining me. My name is Gideon Rothstein, and I present this year and with the good graces of the OU.org, Rabbi Jacob Ram, which helps me out, and David Hachazra helps put this year online, and I want to thank them for their hospitality. Today we're going to study a response of Rav Uziel from Shut Mishpatei Uziel, Krach Gimel, Orach Chaim, Siman Lametet, third volume, the Orach Chaim section, response number 39. And the question at hand was a specific issue of a person who did something on Shabbat that was not seen as being particularly correct, but raises broad policy, group policy issues, and communal policy issues about how we handle people who do not observe Shabbat the way we want them to. The case at hand was a man who was a milkman. And so during the week, he would distribute his milk on bicycle, apparently. And then, this is a tshuva that's dated the 17th of Kislev of Tavshin Vav of 1945. This is a long time ago in terms of transportation. So he used to ride around on his bicycle, and I think he had large milk containers attached to the bike, and then he would pour out to the customers' containers the amount of milk that they needed, and then that's how he would do it. On Shabbos, he wouldn't ride the bike. So he wouldn't ride the bike, and he thought that meant he was violating Shabbat. And this is a question that came from the Central Committee, the Histadrut of the Poel HaMizrahi. There was a time when some political parties in Israel were not just the Mizrahi, but the Poel HaMizrahi were the workers of Mizrahi. It was also sort of a labor unionish kind of an organization. And this is the Rishon LeZion chapter. And they want to know what to do about it. They want to know, is he considered a Mechalel Shabbat? And if he is considered a Mechalel Shabbat, they want to know what to do about him, because their policies are that a Poel HaMizrahi does not include in it people who are Mechalelei Shabbat. So does that mean that he can no longer be a member of their group of Poel HaMizrahi? So Uziel starts with a reminder of the value and the importance of Shabbat. He says a Shabbat is a Yom Kedusha Umenucha. It's a day of sanctity, is the word we use in English for it, and a sort of Kedusha, of a specialness to it. And then Menucha, which often is translated as rest, but he means the whatever rest comes in terms of Shabbat terms. His point being, and he says it, in Kedusha, in Ga Menucha. And let's remember, I always excerpt these tshuvot there. I think here was more beautiful discussion of the importance of Shabbat. I just didn't want to spend all our time on that. But he's saying that without one, there isn't the other. In other words, if somebody simply refrains from violating Shabbat in terms of Menucha, that's not going to actually be Menucha. It's not that it's not going to be the full Shabbat experience. It's not actually the rest part of Shabbat experience, because the rest of Shabbat is not a negative. It's not only an empty space. It's a positive of Kedusha, of sanctity. And then he says it requires of every man and Jewish man and woman that they do both. They have a Kedusha aspect, a sanctity aspect, as well as a Menucha aspect of it. And that's Zohar and Shamor as well. That is the Torah having two verbs that are used in the two versions of the Asarat Dibrot that we have in the Torah. So one says Zohar, one says Shamor, that they are said together, and that it's not just the Shamor, the refraining that makes it Shabbat, it's the Zachor as well, and they are interwoven and interlinked. It's not like you can have one and have a partial experience. They depend on each other, and they are related to and intertwined with each other. And that led to a halacha that's cited in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Aleph, and you're in Orach Chaim, Sif Ted Vav, that you're not allowed to walk outside the way you walk outside during the week without something that will remind you. You have to have something on your hand, so you should wear something that reminds you that it's Shabbat. And Chazal, actually, in Gemara Shabbat, Kuf Yud Gimel, gave us a general principle. They derived it from Pasuk Yishayahu. It says, V'kibadtomi asot terechecha. You have to honor Shabbat from not going in your usual ways on Shabbat. And they said there, Shelo Yihye. Yeah, this is also possibly in Shulchan Aruch and there in Orach Chaim. Shelo yehe bal bushcha shel Shabbat kemal bushcha shel chol. You shouldn't wear clothing on Shabbat the way that you wear during the week. This is a topic I could go on at length about, but Uziel is just mentioning it because he wants to get back to his mailman, so we won't go into it at length, but it's worth remembering. The Shabbos clothing is supposed to be different than our chol clothing. And hiluchach shel Shabbat should not be like hiluchach shel chol. You shouldn't walk on Shabbat the way you walk during the week. Diburach shel Shabbat shel chol shouldn't be. Your speech in Shabbat shouldn't be. That's why you have some people, used to have some people, they meet still today, who would, let's say, only speak Lashon Kodesh on Shabbat. They would only speak Hebrew on Shabbat, whereas during the week they spoke English, Yiddish, whatever it is they spoke. The way we speak is supposed to be different. We're supposed to observe Shabbat. It's supposed to infuse and inform all of our activities of that day. And so Rav Uziel says, I skipped something in between, but these are the essential Torah principles about the nature of Shabbat. And what it teaches us is that Shabbat is not a day of refraining from labor. It's a day of Kedusha, of sanctity, to free. And now I'm going to read a little bit of him, because I think he says it very, very beautifully. L'shachrer, and then I skipped a little bit, but Yisrael misevel hachiloniyut, from the sevel is suffering. Toil is the wrong word for it. It's suffering of secularity, hamonotoni, which is monotonous, right? It's the same thing every day. You go to business, you make money, you relax, you eat, you have a vacation, but it's all the same stuff. V'da'agoteha yom yom yot, and it's daily worries. And he writes, Shehin okulot ke'ash et ha'gufa ve'ha'nefesh. They eat away at our bodies and our souls like moths. You know, you get holes in clothing? It's what kiloniyut, that's what a pure secularism does to you. Mivyot roges ve'ka'as, and they bring anger and fury. And so Shabbos comes, and it gives you a spiritual, a soul freedom, and an exaltedness, a spiritual exaltedness, and a clarity of mind. Clarity of mind, because it takes you out of your usual activity that you can get so caught up in that you forget what's important and what's real and what's true. And this is a day to give yourself a clarity of mind. And that brings along with it joy and happiness, hitromimut udvekut b'kedosh Yisrael, and an exaltedness and a clinging to the Holy One of the Jewish people, meaning a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's why we take off our big day chol. We take off our weekday clothing and wear better clothing and other clothing, because we're symbolizing through our clothing what's supposed to be going on here. We're supposed to be umitna'arim mikol sevel achiloniyut. We are freeing ourselves, we are removing ourselves all of the suffering of secularity. Meaning somebody who lives their whole lives without Shabbat, their whole lives are secular. Somebody who has Shabbat, the rest of their lives aren't secular either. They are involved in mundane activities during the week, necessary activities, important activities, but they don't become secular because they are infused by, they are informed by, I used those words before already, I apologize, by Shabbat. And the perverted isn't the right word, because perverted, we usually think of something like a sexual thing, but the wrongful way of thinking about the world and the depression of our spirits that necessarily happens when we're just caught up in that which doesn't have any ultimate value, that can be gotten rid of on Shabbat by wearing or putting on our neshama yitera, our extra soul, our Shabbat soul. And that is, he says, the experience of Shabbat that is commanded in the Torah. And that's what the Torah means when it says, Hashem sanctified the Shabbat day. Blessed the Shabbat day and sanctified it. Berecho b'ziv panim, the kiddushah b'kiddushat kedosh Yisrael. He blessed it with a different countenance of face and sanctified it with the sanctity of the holiness of Israel. So that's what the Nevi'im meant when they said v'karata l'shabbat oneg l'kdosh Hashem mechubad, that we have to, beyond what's written in the Torah, we have to create and call Shabbat a day of pleasure, and that which is sanctified to Hashem, we have to give it honor. The Chazal who knew all these things, they gave Shabbat these great crowns. So all of that is an introduction to say that even before you get into any technical issues, somebody who on Shabbat just delivers the milk like any other day, so that person is not observing Shabbat kilchato in the proper way. Okay, so now you're going to get into some specific halachic concerns that come up in the distribution of the milk, but that overall introduction I felt struck me as very important as a reminder that applies to many other areas of halacha and of life in terms of our observance of Shabbat. You can unfortunately see many Jews who have not learned these lessons don't realize the nature of Shabbat in that sense. So now let's pick up some of the halachic issues he picks up. One halachic issue he picks up is what's called an uvdin dechol, an activity, a weekday activity. So tnan, we have a mission that says, "Amevika de yain makom makom." You bring barrels of wine or jugs of wine from one place to the other. Lo yivim b'salo kupa. You shouldn't bring them in a basket or in a kind of a holder, but you bring them al ktefo olifanav. You sling them over your back, or you hold them in front of you, and that's the way you carry them. And Tosfot there say, I don't understand. We say about Shabbat, mifanin arba o chamesh kupot, that if we need a certain space, you can push aside, you know, four and five big, you know, big sacks of things or big containers of things, and all the more so on Yom Tov. So how is it that when it comes to bring things on Yom Tov, That's a mission in Beit Zav, which you got to think. When it comes to bringing things from one place to the other, we say you can't do it in the usual way, you have to do it in a different way. Whereas when it comes to Shabbat, we're talking about clearing out a space for people to come, for guests, for Torah learning, whatever it is you're clearing it out for. We say you can move aside lots and lots of stuff. We don't say anything about doing it differently, and it would seem all the more so to be true of Yom Tov. So Tosfos say, answers is that when it comes to Shabbat, so we're talking about a place where there's no Eruv, so maybe it's not called Shekinah Yom Tov is the point, but we're talking about a place where you're not going to bring it outside, you're going to bring it from one place to the other within the boundaries of your house, so nobody will see it. And therefore, it's mutter. Therefore, it's allowed because you're doing something that in and of itself is okay to do, because you have a good reason to do it. It's not like you're just moving stuff around. There's a Ramban on the Torah, not quoted by Rav Uziel here, but Ramban Torah talks about the idea that theoretically one can, you know, move furniture all day in within one's house and not be violating anything on Shabbat, and that's a problem. So here we're talking about there's a purpose and there's a value to doing this, whatever that purpose or value it is. We don't have to talk about it now, but let's say you have guests coming or you have people who want to learn in the Beit Midrash. So since nobody can see it, and it's in a place where, and I think he means that it's on Shabbos and you're not allowed to take it outside, you don't have to worry about that. But the case where we say you have to do it differently, that's where it's on Yom Tov, and therefore, since you can take it outside and people can see it, so the people who will see it will say you're doing it for the Tzorach of Chol, and therefore it's not allowed. That's a Tosfos in Beit Chof Tet Amud Bet. And the Ran writes there, Leivim Besala Kupam, Neshe Yirekim Asedekol, Lasim Masad, it seems like he's doing his work for the week. You know, you carry, just like during the week, you carry loads from place to place. So too on Shabbat, you carry loads from this place. And that's how the Shulchan Aruch Paskins did, that if you're bringing barrels of wine, you can't bring them in any kind of a basket or jugs of wine in the way that you do during the Chol. You have to, and during the week, you have to bring them either in front of you or over your shoulder in a way that's very different than what you would do during the week. So everybody would know and see that it was different. So it seems like now Rav Uziel is talking again. Rav Uziel says that would apparently lead to the conclusion that if anything that looks to people like you're acting the way you would act just like during the week, that would be prohibited on Shabbat and on Yom Tov. And if they say that about an ordinary person, right, who's doing it for his own personal needs, so Rav Uziel says all the more so that we could say that if somebody's doing their business of the whole of the week, that and they're doing it in the way they do it b'chol, and then they do it during the week, and they're doing it to make a living, and they're doing it as part of their business practices, so then clearly it's a problem. And then he says, even if the guy changes, he's not riding the bicycle, that's not enough of a shinui ma'aseh, of a change of your action. He says, because changing the way you do it only works in something that's not actually an uvdin d'chol. If it's not actually your weekday effort, your weekday activity. But here is your weekday activity. Your weekday activity is delivering milk, and here you are delivering milk. So if delivering milk is your weekday activity, says Rav Uziel, then you can't deliver milk on Shabbos, even if you do it in a slightly different way. And that makes you, he says, Oseh dino k'mechalel Shabbat. It makes you like a mechalel Shabbos. That's what he holds about this. Now this is a kind of interesting, complicated issue, because I'm not sure exactly how far he would go with this. I think even here, there's a whole public element to it. But for an example that comes to my mind, as I'm thinking about it, and if you don't like my interpolations, I really apologize, and I'd love to hear from you, grothst@gmail.com. But I think there's a long tradition, especially in Europe, of Shabbos restaurants, of restaurants that are open on Shabbat, they have a mashgiach, they don't cook anything in the wrong way, they don't do anything wrong, and the people pay ahead of time, and the waiters could or could not be Jewish, but in the standard that he's articulated, it's not quite clear to me why that wouldn't qualify in his mind as an uvdin d'chol and would render all the people involved, meaning the owners and maybe even the waiters, into mechalel Shabbos. I think there's an element here, I could be wrong, but I think there's an element here of you're doing it in the public place and it's a public pursuing of one's livelihood. Whereas in the private restaurant, people are coming into your private home or establishment, as were, and they've all paid ahead of time. It's like they're your Shabbat guest, I think. But, you know, it's a complicated question because, let's say, a caterer who caters a Shabbos event. We have this all the time. But you wouldn't say, oh, they're doing it in the call. Now, it's true, they do it differently than this, but in a lot of sense, it's very similar. So I think there's probably an element, very much of an element here, that he's going out into the public space and publicly pursuing his livelihood in a way that would be problematic. However, you differentiate between milk delivery and the examples that I just gave, he is clear that he thinks this alone is significant enough to qualify the pan as a Mechal al Shabbat. And then he talks about another problem that people might not have realized. And one of the things that I always find interesting is the reminder that when we consult with Gedolei Torah on issues of Judaism, very often they'll bring up issues that we might not have even thought about. Meaning the man clearly thought about the riding the bike problem. He knew that Jews don't ride bikes on Shabbat, so he didn't ride a bike on Shabbat. He didn't think about the Uvdin Dechol issue, that's one, but here's an even more interesting one. What about the prohibition of selling things on Shabbat when you measure them out? A person can say to another, one Jew can say to another Jew, fill up this pot for me, fill up this container for me, even if that container actually is a measuring cup. So if I said, you know, I have a one cup measuring cup, I said, could you just fill this cup for me? I don't mention that it's a measuring cup. That's okay. The reason it's okay, though, is because I'm not specifically talking about measuring out a certain amount. And that's talking about when the purchaser is taking something from, taking the measuring cup, let's say, of the seller, or is bringing it on his own. But if the seller pours the milk out, this is what happens, pours the milk out into a specific measuring cup, and then from that measuring cup pours it into the utensils of the buyer, that's going to be prohibited. That's the Shulchan Aruch Arachaim Simon Shim Chav Gimel. So if here the case would be, he had a huge vat, let's say, of milk on the back of his bicycle. It might not have been a bicycle in the sense that we're thinking of. It might have been that a bicycle with a flatbed sort of behind it, and on the flatbed you had this huge vat of milk, and then it had a spigot, and from the spigot you'd pour out exactly a quart, let's say, and then you'd give the people the quart, but not, you have your quart container, you wouldn't give them quarts, glass quarts all the time. From there you'd pour it into whatever they wanted to hold it in. So that's going to be an actual measuring. And the Rama writes, there v'yesh makilin, kol she'eino mechavein l'midah l'gamrei, shemimait omotziv shari. So the Rama had a kula, that if you weren't really careful about it, you weren't exact about it, and you did a little bit more, a little bit less, that would be okay. And the Taz there, and I always like to point out that Ruziel refers to him as the Tuz, Tuf, Tet, Vav, Zion, because it's really Turezaham, so it should really be the Tuz rather than the Taz, but everybody says, I know, says the Taz. He writes it always as the Tuz, says, had a question, and he thinks it's a big question on the Rambam, meaning it's not clear to him why this Kula is allowed in the Rambam. And then he has another question and another problem. If you're going to pour from your own, from the big vat of the coin, let's get of the seller, then you're going to pour directly into the consumer's container. Let's say they have milk bottles of their own. That's an Uvdin Dechol for sure. And not only is it an Uvdin Dechol, so then that might get around the problem of measuring out, but it's an Uvdin Dechol. Ordinarily, that the Mishnah, which allows it, only allows it if you don't mention a measuring at all, and also if you only do it occasionally, meaning I also need a cup of sugar. So I bring my measuring cup over to you and I say, fill this with sugar for me, please. So I don't mention it. So that kula, that leniency, that since I didn't measure, then I mention the measure, that it's okay. That's only if I'm doing it occasionally. I do it just as it happens that I'm doing it. And about lo yalel, I thought nobody would imagine to allow opening a store on Shabbos or on Yom Tov and selling to everybody comes in, you know, a bag of apples, a pound of apples. As long as, you know, I have a pound bag, as long as I don't mention the pound, that's okay. You have business. And even if it's with no money, right, he says, it's clearly pursuing weekday activities. So again, you have to think back to my restaurant case. I think of the restaurant case because we've purchased the food ahead of time, and therefore we're just coming for the food ourselves. Or the catering case, the money's all been paid ahead of time, and the food is all measured out already. But here, if I'm going to come into the store and then initiate a purchase, that's an Uvdin Dechol. We, on other occasions, have seen other Chivot, or the Nodav Yehuda, who lived long before Uziel, was comfortable with a non-Jew staffing a Jew store on Shabbat, if the non-Jew makes money off of each sale as well. That's a whole different discussion. But here, he's saying it's an Uvdin Dechol, and all the more so when the seller is going from house to house to all the consumers and giving them milk by measure. So that's a second problem. So one problem was the whole Shabbos issue in general. Then there's the Uvdin Dechol issue, that you're acting as you act during the week. Then there's the measuring out issue. And therefore, we hear from ourselves, he summarizes now, you've got this double prohibition. You've got the bringing of the milk where everybody sees it in public. That's an Uvdin Dechol in public. It's a weekday activity in public. And the measuring out of the milk from the milkman's big vat into and mentioning how much you're selling. I'm selling you a liter. I'm selling you a quart. I'm selling you whatever it is. So that's a problem as well. And then there's another issue that he raises. He throws in that he's always said that whenever we talk about somebody making his Shabbat chol, any way that you make it chol, if you make it like the regular week, it's like a chilul Shabbos. So here it's at least like a chilul Shabbos in this way as well. A third issue is the question of lending. It's not the lending issue, but the Shulchan Aruch paskins that if somebody borrows something from somebody else on Shabbat, you can't say halveini. Don't use that word halveini. And the reason why we say not to use the word halveini to lend me is that we're worried that people will come to write down the loan. Meaning if I say, hey, give me that for a bit, right? So that's not so formal. And what's not so formal, the worry that we'll write it down is much less so. But as soon as I say lend it to me, there it becomes a more formal thing. And since people tended to write things down like that to make sure they didn't forget loans, you have to worry that maybe they'll write it down. And writing, says the Rav Uziel, reminds us, is one of the avot melachot. It's one of the 39 serious capital ways one can violate Shabbat. And so any place where they're worried about writing and they say, don't do this because you might come to write, Rav Uziel says, that's not a siyag. It's not like a protective fence. It's a recognition that it's likely to happen. That's a category of rabbinic prohibitions that is not commonly known, but I think it's worth paying attention to. We often say Chazal made siyagot, they made fences to protect us from falling into the trap of violating the Torah. He's saying sometimes when they do that, though, it's not a fence. It's not a fence. It's that they're recognizing that it's so likely to happen that you have to expect that it'll happen in enough cases that it's got to be a problem. He gives an example of it. The Gemara in Shabbat talks about the fact you're not supposed to read by the light of a candle on Shabbat, or certain kinds of candles on Shabbat, because we're worried you'll reach up and tilt the candle to make the light better for you. So the way around this is if you put the candle up where you can't reach it or something like that, then I think that's the way to grab it. Then you protect yourself in some way from even having the problem of forgetting. And the Gemara in Shabbat, you'd better bet, tells us that Yoshua ben Elisha said, I can do it. I'll read and I won't tip the candle. And then there's a whole discussion about he almost tipped it. And Rabbi Natan there says, no, he actually tipped it. So tipping a candle will increase the flow of the oil into the flame. And that's considered burning on Shabbat as a violation of Shabbat. So what it shows you is that when Chazal say don't do something because you might end up doing something else, sometimes what they mean is, often what they mean is, that we can be almost positive that you will end up doing that thing, and therefore you have to do it. And if that's true, I'm sorry, and then they say it's very similar to, he says, it's very similar to, there's another Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chaf Aleph Amud, which says, why did the Torah not give reasons for the mitzvot? It didn't give reasons for the mitzvot because he knows that when people know the reasons, they'll say, oh, that reason doesn't apply to me, and it gives this terrible, scary example that the Torah did give reasons for a couple of mitzvot, for the king's mitzvot, the king's obligation, let's say, not to marry many wives. And Shlomo HaMelech, who is considered the wisest of all people to have ever lived, saw the Torah say, don't take many wives because they'll lead your heart astray. And he said, they're not going to lead my heart astray. And yet, at the end of his life, the Pasuk says that they did lead his heart astray. So how do you understand the definition of leading the heart astray? The point that Rav Uziel is making is, you see in the Torah as well, that there are times when we say, don't do this because it'll lead to X. And you say, oh, it'll lead to X for other people, not for me. And you can't say that's the thing. And so that's going to be true here in our case as well. When they said, don't do lending because you're going to end up writing things down, what they meant was it's very, very likely. So with this guy, when he's giving out milk, so there are accounts to be had, and let's say people tended to pay by the week and somebody didn't pay, or somebody was behind, you'd be tempted to write down those things and he might forget that it's Shabbat. That's a third problem with his delivering the milk on Shabbat. And therefore, he's also Mechal Shabbat because it's very close to it coming that he'll end up writing on Shabbat. Another problem is that we have a halacha of lifta iver lo titin michshol. Jews are not allowed to foster in other Jews a violation of the Torah. The milk at the time apparently was not pasteurized. It was not pre-boiled. And therefore it had all sorts of diseases in it. So the solution that people already knew was boiling it. Problem was, he's going to deliver the milk to people who were not Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, who are not observant. They're going to boil their milk on Shabbat. So he, by giving them the milk, it's a lifta iver problem. It's a problem of he is making possible for them a violation of Shabbat. And we have a problem that we don't allow. We think that it's prohibited for Jews to foster in other Jews' sin. This creates many, many problems, many issues, many ways to deal with this. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a famous tshuva where he talks about, can you give food to a Jew who knows is not going to make a bracha? whole discussion. He ends up saying you can, but it was Yel's pointing out when this Jew provides them the milk, he's leading them to boil the milk on Shabbat, which is a prohibited activity. So now the guy's going to say, well, if I don't sell it to them, they'll get it from somebody else. So that's what's called in halacha trei ibrei de nahara, that the question is whether the person is on the same side of the river as whatever's prohibited him, so he can get it on his own or not, or they're on the opposite side of the river. Who's else? In this case, he makes it two opposite sides of the river because it might be true that in general they can get milk from other people, but this particular Shabbat they can't get milk from anybody else, and in that place they're not going to get milk from anybody else, and therefore when he gives them the milk, he's violating Liftei Iver. So without him, they couldn't do it. And not only that, he says also, in Rishon LeZion, it's all Jews. So the only other milk they could get would be milk they would get from other Jews. And all those Jews have a Liftei Iver problem. Now that's an interesting question that he doesn't go into at length, and I'm not going to go into it at length here because I also want to finish on time today. But you have to raise an interesting question. If other Jews are willing to violate the prohibition of Liftei Iver, is that considered as if this Jew still has to worry about it because it's like the person who's being provided with the prohibited materials is on two sides of a river and can't get it, or is it that he can get it? So if I'm living in a world where plenty of Jews will provide other Jews with items they shouldn't be having, does that still make it Liftei Iver when I do it? For the moment, in Rishon LeZion, Rav Uziel is saying yes, and therefore he thinks it's a Liftei Iver problem. It's a problem of this Jew helping these Jews by providing them the material that would lead them to violate Shabbat. He says, but you'll sell me, but other Jews are Mechalel Shabbos. They violate the Torah everywhere. So, of course, they would provide milk to these people. So, it doesn't matter. Because since we're all commanded, Rav Uziel says we're all commanded, it doesn't mean just because other people violate the Torah, it doesn't free me of the problem of the issue of Liftei Iver. And so too, the Mishnah LeMelech said about the laws of charging interest. Even if it's true that if I don't lend an interest to this Jew, somebody else would lend to them, that doesn't mean, or the other way around, I don't borrow from this Jew in interest, somebody else will borrow from him. That doesn't mean it's not Liftei Iver. It's Liftei Iver because we're not allowed to lead other Jews to sin, even if other people will. So I think the laws of Liftei Iver become more complicated over time, especially as more and more Jews, unfortunately, don't keep the Torah. But that's where he leads this discussion at this moment. So, sum total. The Jew clearly can't be a milkman on Shabbos. He can't do it like the way he does it. Bekal. Now, you might ask yourself, especially at a time when it seems like there wasn't refrigeration yet either, because you have daily delivery of milk. Because if you didn't have daily delivery of milk, it sounds like this milkman would have just delivered it on Friday and then again on Sunday. It sounds like you have a daily milk delivery, and the reason you have daily milk delivery is because the milk couldn't keep the milk for more than a day, and that's because refrigeration was either not yet common. Refrigeration is right around then becoming in America widespread, but I think it wasn't completely widespread yet in Israel. So if you don't have refrigeration and people need milk, what do you do about it? Now, the truth is, if people need milk, but they have to pasteurize it themselves, then part of the answer could be, well, Orthodox Jews would have to do without milk on Shabbos because they can't pasteurize it. Okay, but the question of how do you provide for needs that are daily needs and that you can't do in another way, that's a hard, interesting question. So I think electricity, for example, you have factories that produce electricity. If you need to have people making sure the factories work in ways that are Shabbat prohibited, that creates all sorts of issues and questions for a Jewish state. So these are kinds of issues that will come up more and more as time goes on. But right now, as far as we're going, he says, there's a problem with delivering the milk, because he's doing an uvdin duchol, an activity like he does during the week, and so therefore it's clearly prohibited, and he clearly qualifies as a mechalel Shabbat. In terms of kicking him out of Hapoel Mizrahi, so Rav Uziel says, I have a problem here. On the one hand, there's a Gemara in Sotah Mizayin Amar Aleph says that we should always, when we're dealing with difficult people and problematic people, the left hand should push them away, and the right hand should bring them close, meaning we don't just ignore what they're doing, but on the other hand, we try to work hard to make sure we don't lose them, and we maintain a connection to them. Not like Elisha. Elisha had a problematic student named Gehazi. Gehazi did a couple of terrible things, and Elisha kicked him out. And the Gemara finds that problematic, and we don't have to go into that now, but the Gemara finds it problematic. It says Elisha might have gone too far in that situation. We should try to strive for that balance. So in that sense, you'd like to try to keep this milkman close. You'd like to keep him sort of part of the movement, as it were. On the other hand, if you let him get away with it, and he's a member of Hapoel HaMizrahi in good standing, you have this other problem that people will come to think that it's allowed. And there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Pei Bet Amid Bet, the Rav Uziel mentions that the problem is people say, Hiti Reprushim, that the Jews who care about halacha and care about mitzvos, they said it's okay. So, and since Hapoel HaMizrahi is known to be a Torah observant movement, and everybody in the movement is Torah observant, if they start allowing this and turning a blind eye to it, so then you're going to think, people are going to say, it must be okay because they are allowing it. So since they've made a rule that a Mechal Shabbos can't be part of the membership, it's hard to say they'll just let it slide and let this guy keep going. Especially since people don't always know that it's a prohibited. They'll just say, oh, it must be true. That if you're a milkman, as long as you don't ride the bike and you do it by hand on Shabbos, it must be okay. So that implication that people will get, that inference people will draw, is a problem. And therefore, you have to make clear that that's not true. And therefore, he says, and this is where he leaves it, is I'm going to assume that the milkman, I'm going to judge him to the meritorious side. He doesn't realize it's a prohibition. And there's some indication of that because he chose not to ride his bike. He seems to realize he wanted to keep Shabbos in some sense. He just thought he'd get away with it doing it this way. And therefore, he says, just inform him of everything I've written here. And ulochicho bedivrei noam, and try to find the pleasantest way possible to remonstrate with him about what he's doing, about his weakness, and let him remind him that it's part of his sort of, he seems to have a weakness of faith in that he doesn't believe that his livelihood really comes from Hashem, and that even if he keeps Shabbat fully, Hashem will nonetheless make sure that he's okay financially. Which is a hard thing to say also, because in Eretz Yisrael in the 40s and 50s, it wasn't always easy to make a living at all. I'm not saying that Hashem wasn't with them. I'm just saying that it took a lot of faith for a lot of people because they had to struggle through some very, very hard times in Eretz Yisrael, and it took effort. But in any case, you should talk to him this way, and hopefully, and he says, we'll move to Chani, and I'm sure that he will accept your words and he'll come back, and then you'll be able to keep him in. He doesn't actually deal with what happens if it doesn't work out. So neither will we, but that is a question that unfortunately too often arises. But for the 17th of Kislev, Rav Uziel from Mishpatei Uziel, Krak Gimel, Volume 3, Orech Chaim Lametet, telling us about a milkman on Shabbos and all the broad Shabbos issues that come up, and issues of membership in the groups and the group's requirement to set standards so they don't give the wrong impression to people. All of those are important issues that came up in a responsible day for the 17th of Kislev. Have a great day.